BDNG podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I am the Education Development Lead for the BDNG. I hope you enjoy listening to the BDNG podcast and find them beneficial to your practice. These podcasts are sponsored by Amaril. Amaril has no influence over the content of these podcasts. Happy listening! Hello everybody and welcome to another episode of BDNG Meets Podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I'm the Education and Development Lead for the BDNG. And today I have the great pleasure of introducing Julie Begum, who is the lead nurse for rheumatology at the Luton and Dunstable Hospital. So I've been really fortunate to work with Julie over the last few years and she's a fantastic nurse, very passionate, very dynamic about what she does. And today our podcast is on focus on collaboration, dermatology and rheumatology working together, early diagnosis and how to achieve that. So welcome Julie, and could
you so much Tia, pleasure. I'm delighted to be here with you on this podcast and hopefully we'll get some good sharing between the two specialties.
Absolutely. So Julie, could you just give a quick more introduction to yourself, how you got into rheumatology and what you actually do within your role?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I'm a rheumatology nurse by background, came into rheumatology in 2008 as a CNS, and I've gradually worked my way up. So in 2017, I became the lead nurse for the service. So I've got a team of rheumatology nurses that I now work for. I academically developed, so I got my master's and I'm now an advanced clinical practitioner in rheumatology. And what that enables us to do is to really work at that senior level alongside our consultant colleagues, diagnosing and managing our patient care. I've done my nurse prescribing, so I'm able to take my patient through that patient journey quite seamlessly. And work quite autonomously with my patients in rheumatology. So we work in inflammatory arthritis. So we have a number of conditions we look after for this podcast, obviously psoriatic arthritis. So skin and joints is our focus. And we've obviously started thinking very recently how valuable our dermatology nurses are in one, extending our knowledge, and two, for our patient care, how really important it is that we start working together. So I am really, really pleased for the invitation to come onto this podcast, Tina.
Oh, an absolute pleasure, Julie. And I know we've worked in collaboration. We've done lots of presentations together and it's been really well received, hasn't it, Julie, on, you know, both parts, dermatology and rheumatology. And I think, you know, to work with our rheumatology colleagues is such a inspiring but also really important role to have. Julie, do you work alongside the dermatology nurses within your hospital? How does it work?
So we've had a couple of changing faces. So we're also an outpatient-based specialty. So we used to have our dermatology colleagues just sort of up the corridor from us. But we've had a couple of changes. They've been moved off site. We've been moved off site. So a lot of it is emails and sort of virtual consultations with regards to us talking about patients in an MDT style. We have been very fortunate that our consultants have been very forward thinking and they've been able to develop a joint clinic. So every 3 months the dermatology team will come to where we're based and they will run a joint clinic for our very, very complex patients. And our idea had been obviously to get our nursing colleagues from both sides to sort of input into that, which we do quite loosely. We've had issues with recruitment and that's not working as brilliantly as we should do, but hopefully we aspire to get that back to where it needs to be. But we feel that we have communication with our dermatology nurses, but maybe not as brilliantly as maybe we can do in the future for our patient group.
It's so important, isn't it, just to have that, you know, closeness really and know our colleagues in each speciality. And I just want you to explain, Julie, a wee bit about psoriatic arthritis and the importance of obviously highlighting to rheumatology, you know, when it's in early stages and not and sort of the signs to work to look out for and when to refer.
Yeah. So again, obviously for the psoriatic arthritis, what we're concerned about is joints. So we're looking for joint swelling. And this is what we are primarily concerned about because this is what can cause damage to the underlying bone. And once that's happened, it's quite hard to reverse that. So for the psoriatic element and the psoriasis element, patients can present with the skin psoriasis, which is why our dermatology colleagues are so important. But they can also be diagnosed with the absence of that that sign and symptom. So we look at a lot of things such as family history, and that clinical sort of diagnosis is made by that history taking. So a lot of time spent with the patient on that first initial consultation, looking for psoriasis, looking for where the joints may be inflamed. And it's quite a peripheral disease, so it can be quite widespread. So our joint examination involves a number of joints. As you know, the skin side of things is very in depth as well. And a lot of talking to the patient about how conditioners affected their lives. So what we tend to see with our psoriatic arthritis patients is they tend to be a lot younger, of working age, which is very different from our rheumatoid arthritis patients who tend to be a little bit older. And what we tend to hear an awful lot is that the patients have had this journey where they've been with their GP an awful lot, trying topical treatments to help with psoriasis, and where it's flared, they've obviously changed them onto other bits and pieces. They've not recognised maybe the joint element, that it is something that is connected, and that this is, you know, potentially another diagnosis that could be made. So they've not recognised it as patients, but maybe the GPs haven't recognised it as well. It's obviously taken patients, from the stories we hear, an awful long time to be referred into dermatology to get that specialist care for skin, and even longer, unfortunately, to get into a rheumatology department. So what we're seeing at the moment is that if they are coming into specialty care, it's coming in through the dermatology arm. And this is why we're so keen to work with our dermatology colleagues, because actually there's a lot of work we can do and a lot of information sharing that we could do that could really improve that patient journey. So if our dermatology colleagues also know what to look for from a joint perspective, then obviously they can really help us with regards to finding these patients within the dermatology specialty service and then getting them across to us, so that at least if we haven't got them straight from the GP, we can get them from our expert colleagues in dermatology. But it is very, very difficult. And again, I've been really fortunate that I've been able to sit in with my dermatology nurse colleagues, and you know, I'm amazed about what you guys do in your consultations. We know that there's not an awful lot of time to get everything done, and actually while your focus is skin, all of your time is going to be sort of focused on there. But I know we've got sort of tools that we've developed that we hope dermatology colleagues find easy to use, that would just give us that extra little bit of information. And then if we can have those patients, even if dermatology colleagues aren't sure, at least we can screen, do our bit of specialty from the rheumatology side, discharge if we don't need them, but also most importantly, start treating if we really do need to start treating them.
That's fantastic. A lot of really good information there, Julie. And focusing what you're saying about as working as a dermatology nurse in clinic, what would be my main priority when it comes to joints? You mentioned tools there. What would be important for you if I was referring a patient on to you?
So we have got a recognised tool, which hopefully dermatology nurses might have used before. So the PEST tool is something that's always been designed by our colleagues in Leeds to be simple and quick. So it just looks at where those joints are and that joint involvement. And again, if you get a number of ticks, there's a certain number that there's a criteria that then that person should come to rheumatology. But I think, you know, just slightly wider than just the tool, I think you guys are brilliant when you're looking after psoriasis. So actually the severity of the psoriasis is a concern, because actually this is a early hallmark that it could turn into psoriatic arthritis, where the psoriasis is. So things like scalp psoriasis, genitalia psoriasis, these are things that we know are also severity markers and may be the markings of that patient not doing as well and maybe progressing to psoriatic arthritis. So those types of things are things that we're really interested in. If patients are complaining about joint pain, arthralgia, so that's that general tiredness, for us to be thinking that there might be something systemic going on, and it may be that they're able to show you one or two joints that look swollen. So certainly what we see with our patients is sort of on the hands, something we call dactylitis, where it looks like a hammer's hit the finger. So it's really red and really shiny, and that's a real severity marker for us. That's very, very difficult to treat. We know it's on the toes as well. So again, with my dermatology colleague that I was in with, we know that you guys will take all clothes off and screen from top to bottom, which is absolutely brilliant and something we need to learn in rheumatology. But again, if you're seeing that same type of thing on the toes, that's another marker for us to maybe have a conversation with your rheumatology colleagues about what's going on. Yeah, the psoriasis, again, you guys are brilliant at dealing with that. But I know for a lot of our complex patients, there still needs to be a discussion with regards to what's going to help that patient holistically, so joints and skin. So those are a couple of things that dermatology nurses can look out for.
That's really informative, actually, because it is, you're busy in clinic, and in, you know, I've been really fortunate in my clinical setting to work with the rheumatology nurse. As you know, Julie, we set up a dual nurse-led clinic between us three times a year, which has been fantastic because I've learned so much from the rheumatology department. And I think, like you say, the PEST is quite a straightforward tool, and asking just a little bit more questions around joints is always useful, and pass that on to your rheumatology colleagues, definitely. As dermatology nurses, as rheumatology nurses, I know we see each other now and again, but not always as much as we would like to. Do you feel the specialities overlap so much, and do you feel that education with rheumatology nurses sort of sits online with what we've got in dermatology? How does that sit in rheumatology, Julie?
Yeah, it's a brilliant question, Tina. So I think we're learning so much more now, and we're now learning how important it is that there is that close relationship between rheumatology and dermatology, because obviously the conditions fall under that seronegative umbrella, and anything can turn into anything. So we could have a patient present to us that has the absence of psoriasis, but once it starts, and it can start later on down the course, it may be that we need help to start treating that patient, and vice versa. So you see a whole load of patients through dermatology, and there will be a percentage of those patients that will have joint involvement that we need to see in rheumatology. I think now that we're learning how important it is that we work together, the education is starting to come up. I know you do some brilliant stuff with lots of your dermatology nurse colleagues, and it's great. And we're trying to do the same in rheumatology. And I feel we've got a long way to go. So we need good understanding of what the other does. So from a clinical perspective and from a role perspective as well. So I think people listening may not be as fortunate as you and I, Tina, that we can go into our dermatology or rheumatology clinics and see what the other does. And actually, that's probably what has taught me the most. And really understanding it from a dermatology point of view means that I'm not asking for lots of things, because you can't deliver that. And also that I'm only asking for the really important things and trying to make it as simple as possible. And likewise, you know, we ask our dermatology colleagues, you know, can you help us with topical treatments, and, you know, what can we advise that isn't going to harm our patients, or, you know, the evidence base doesn't change too much that it's safe for us to advise as rheumatology nurses. And actually, we've had our colleagues design fact sheets and things like that for us, which is really quick and easy and for us to then be able to use. And I think that sharing of resource, that exchange of knowledge is really, really important, and we should continue building on it. And I think as I've started working with dermatology nurses like yourself, it's really interesting to hear from the rheumatology nurses or the dermatology nurses about what they need from an education stance. And actually, certainly from a rheumatology point of view, we really need to go back to basic skin and you know, how skin works, the function, the turnover in the 28 days, and really start there, because you don't know what you don't know, and starting a conversation in the middle is really, really difficult. So we're really at the moment about going right back to the baseline and you know, getting our dermatology nurses to treat us as if we were new dermatology nurses, so that we're not missing anything when we're learning about psoriasis and how that progresses. So exciting times, lots to learn though.
Very excited. And yeah, I mean, sharing the knowledge, isn't it? It's fantastic. And I think, you know, we have got lots to learn. And you hit the nail on the head there with, you know, getting back to basics. I think sometimes we, you know, throw ourselves into sort of more sort of, I would say, advanced practice, or, you know, I think lots of dermatology, rheumatology nurses have been practicing at a clinical nurse specialist for a long time, but that's not always the case. And I think, you know, it's really good to go back and look at the basics of rheumatology and dermatology. Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned, obviously, I know you've built up your pathway, and I know you've done a lot of job planning, you've made competencies, and you've mentioned, obviously, you've completed the MSc as well, Julie. When it comes to competencies for rheumatology nurses, or maybe doing advanced studies like an MSc, is there anything specific there for rheumatology nurses? How does that fit in?
Yeah, so again, you know, we do have the same as yourselves, the cohort of nurses that will go on and to do advanced practice. So there is a pathway. Again, I have to commend the dermatology nurses because they have done amazingly well with their structured education, and certainly rheumatology has come definitely after that. So we're sort of learning as we go and learning from people that are doing it very well, like our dermatology colleagues. So yeah, we do have a competency framework now. So that was developed by the Royal College of Nursing Rheumatology Forum. So I was really, really fortunate to be involved in that project work that was led by Di Finney, one of our consultant nurses in rheumatology. And it really gives that structure now. So from that very entry point for rheumatology nurses to those ones that do want to go and progress to be advanced clinical practice, practitioners, that there is that nice career progression, which we didn't have before that was published in 2020. So, you know, there's something there now that we can really guide the career. And I think rheumatology nursing is what you make it. So again, academically, when you're working at those advanced practice levels, of having a master's is really, really important. And the reason it's important is because it where you're making those complex clinical decisions, you've got to be able to critique that evidence that you're looking at and be able to use that skill that you get from studying in your clinical practice. And again, you know, we're very fortunate now to have lots of master's level rheumatology specific modules, and so you don't need to do the master's as a 3-year full course. You can do modules, and there are modules that will just look at drugs, there will be modules that look at disease, and modules that look at holistic care of our patients, and so there is lots of stuff out there. So Keele University is our main one that we are advocating and promoting, because we know it's got a really good history of teaching rheumatology nurses, but there are other programs available out there. And I think the world is changing, and you know, it's difficult to go up to Keele if you live in the south. So there are some online modules that you can take. So the University of Wales have just developed something that can be done online, and you still have the support of your colleagues, you still have excellent teaching. It's just a different way of learning. And I think COVID has really taught us that we've got to have lots of options, so that people can tap into what suits them, so we still get the output, which is the really you know, advanced nurses wanting to be able to look after patient care.
Absolutely. And online, it does make a difference. You learn so much from online. It does fit in with busy lifestyles as well. So it gives people opportunities, doesn't it? And it's great. You've got structure and you've got the competencies there. And I know you've worked really hard on that as well, which is so positive what you've achieved, Julie. And also, you've been very complimentary about dermatology, but it's about time I was complimentary about rheumatology. The nurses I've worked with and people like yourself, you know, the knowledge there is superb. And, you know, it's always great to learn so much more about rheumatology. We've mentioned a wee bit about psoriatic arthritis there. And you guys are so great at, you know, signposting patients to certain aspects of exercise, lifestyle change. I think, obviously, it's possibly better than dermatology nurses, definitely, when I've been in clinics with rheumatology. I mean, do you specifically signpost lifestyle changes to all patients in rheumatology, or how does that work, or is it with different aspects of rheumatology?
So yeah, absolutely. So thank you for the compliments back. It is really nice to know that our skill set has been recognised by our dermatology colleagues as well. So no, that's absolutely brilliant. And I think certainly from a comorbidities point of view, lifestyle changes and supporting patients through those types of things, we it's long-term conditions, it's something that's part bread and butter. I think we've got better as we've gone on, and the patient organizations are brilliant, and they've really developed as well, which makes it really easy for us to signpost. So again, I'm really fortunate. I'm the National Rheumatoid Arthritis Society nurse advisor for the UK, and just watching them grow as an organization and supporting rheumatoid arthritis patients has been incredible. But as we as we've grown and we've learned and we've tapped into sort of digital world, we've developed really good self-management tools for our patients. And we know this is really, really important. But we also know we need to link in our patients with these resources. And, you know, there's a huge power in the specialty service recommending something. So while we know that those resources have been made by us, they're evidence-based, and they're really going to help patients, we're just in the middle of measuring the lutein pathway to see what kind of impact being able able to signpost patients to resources like this is making. It's really, really interesting times. And I think what we now know is that for patients with inflammatory arthritis, it's so important. You're only going to see us a couple of times in clinic. And I think when we looked at our first year of care, it was only 2 hours with the specialist nurse team. And then only a few other touch points with the consultant. So, you get a new diagnosis, you're going to have to live with this because we can't cure inflammatory arthritis, we can only treat the symptoms. And patients have got a lot of questions, and not just about the condition and the drugs, but actually the fatigue and the pain and managing work and family. And we've got to be better at being able to support all of that. And also making patients understand that they can play a huge part by taking a real onus on self-management. So what can you do? You can improve your diet, you can exercise, and all of these things have a huge impact on patient care, cardiovascular disease, the inflammatory disease, reducing weight, and the impact on joints is reduced. So there's so much that any CNS now has to do, because as well as the specialty area, we've got to make sure that our patients understand that this stuff is really important as well. So we're very, very pro health promotion at Luton.
You are, yeah, I know how fantastic you are at promoting healthy lifestyles, definitely. And it's empowering that patient, isn't it, is to take that responsibility. We haven't got a magic wand that can cure these, either psoriasis or psoriatic arthritis or others that you've mentioned. And I think it's empowering the patient to take on that responsibility in a way, isn't it? Definitely.
Absolutely. When our conditions can be, very active, and then they can go into remission. We need to teach patients when they need to be contacting us about. So with the, things like PIFU, as the patient initiated follow-ups that have come in, and NHS England are all for that. And absolutely, that's the right thing to do. None of us have capacity where we can just keep taking patients in. We need to step down some of our patients that are doing really, really well. But if they understand their condition really well, and we help them to do that, then there isn't that danger, because they will know when they need to come back and speak to us. So yeah, lots of stuff to do to try and make sure that patients are really well informed. So we know our nurses are really well informed. We need to do that next bit, which is make sure that they are really well informed so they can use that service more flexibly.
And you mentioned there a couple of signposting. Could you just repeat a couple or two or three of signposting that you would recommend for patients?
So for our rheumatoid arthritis patients, we use the National Rheumatoid Arthritis Society an awful lot. So that's for the rheumatoid arthritis patients. For our psoriatic arthritis patients, what we're promoting at the moment is the GRAPPA resources. So these are UK-based colleagues in Leeds that have developed our resources. So again, very, very evidence-based. And when you go on there, there's lots of literature that you can print and use for your patients. There is a specific part for health promotion if people are interested in that. And again, we've got PAPA as a psoriatic arthritis organisation. We've got the psoriasis organisation as well. So find what you like. And I think that's really important as well. So it's all very well we're recommending, but you may prefer one or the other. So the most important thing is, as long as the information is evidence-based and up to date, then, look at a couple of things and see what you like and go with that.
My eyes were opened with GRAPPA, definitely, Julie, because, it was a site that I'd not really delved into. And I think it was about two years ago and discovered GRAPPA. And it's got some really useful, and for derm as well, actually, it's got some really useful tools and lifestyle changes, etc. on there. So it's really, really useful. Absolutely. Do you feel we're getting better collaborating? Do you feel rheumatology and dermatology are improving with collaboration? How do you feel about it? Where do you think it sits at the moment?
I definitely do. And again, we've had numerous opportunities to work with each other and colleagues on both sides as well. So I do think that the conversation is getting better. I think what we're getting better at is our voices louder, why we know why it's so important. So, we could always do more. It would be absolutely brilliant if every hospital in the UK had this conversation between dermatology and rheumatology. We know we've only scratched the surface, and actually we've still got quite a lot of work to do. So only a small percentage of hospitals have got that pathway embedded and are using it. So lots of work to do. And I think there's lots of pressures on services at the moment, but where we can evidence that working like this is good for patient care, then we should certainly be, you know, continue to push that conversation of us all working together. And I've been really, really lucky. I've been invited to things by you, Tina, and it's amazing when everybody's in the room together. And you know, you're there with the agenda and we're doing the meetings, but actually the spontaneous conversations, the things we haven't thought about, the things that the delegates are bringing up, I always find it super interesting, and I go away learning loads from meetings like that. So I'm super thankful for your invitations from you, but also to be in the room with dermatology is something that I really think even I'm learning, and any opportunity I get, I try to go. And that would be my message to anybody listening. Just go and have a look and see. It feels like it's more work and it's more for us to learn. But actually, if we do it better and we do it together, imagine the touch points we could remove for the patient. Imagine if we could get the patient into remission quicker because we're working together, because we're pulling in the expertise of dermatology and the expertise of rheumatology. Imagine if we could get the treatment right the first time because we've had conversations before we've started biologic therapies and advanced therapies. There's so much wonderful stuff we can do if we just continue in this way and be louder. So what we want is every rheumatology and dermatology nurse in their trust to know who each other is. And I think that's our big push at the moment, just to connect people. And by these meetings has been a brilliant way.
Absolutely. Be loud. That's a good statement there, Julie, definitely. And I think you're right. There's so much overlap. I mean, that's what we both inspire to. And we all learn from these conferences. But it's, you know, the networking is so important, bouncing off each other and, you know, learning from each other. I mean, I've been fortunate to teach the research rheumatology team how to identify skin with through PASI and EASI. And, you know, like you mentioned as well, advice on emollients and, you know, actually skin conditions as well. But on the back of that, I've learned so much from the rheumatology people, consultants, nurses, research teams. And it's really what's important in that limited time frame of your consultation, what we should be doing in dermatology to, you know, help our rheumatology and help our patient, you know, to identify early disease as well, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think, as we talked about earlier, just even those few little things, so psoriasis, which you guys are looking at all the time, where is it, the severity of it, that should be red flag. And then if the patients are talking about joints, so just connecting those two dots and thinking about, actually, should we get rheumatology to just have a look here? And so, you know, certainly from a rheumatology point of view, once the joints are affected by the inflammatory diseases, there's nothing we can do to reverse that. So we really do want these patients early. And I think sometimes people worry about sending patients that they're not quite sure, are they, aren't they? But that's the whole point. It's a screening tool. It's not 100% accurate. But you've done your best. You've sent them. And actually, if it isn't anything, we can discharge them. If it is something, or we've got a suspicion, we've got the blood tests and things that we could ask for to try and confirm that diagnosis. So it doesn't matter. If you can really write down why you think this person needs rheumatology input, nobody's ever going to say, no, absolutely, that's wrong. What we can do is obviously pick up referrals and give advice back on how you can maybe improve the identification. But I know our dermatology colleagues would do that to us as well. So I know, as a rheumatology nurse, I find doing the PASI really difficult. I've been in rheumatology an awful long time, but it's not my bread and butter. So I couldn't report in psoriasis like that to my dermatology nurse colleagues, but I can give them an idea of severity, scale, what the patient's tried, and really try and give a real good history so the dermatology nurse can make a decision as to, you know, should I give one of these really important appointments that everybody's probably vying for to that rheumatology person that I've highlighted. So, you know, we've got to have good conversations and we've got to learn the lingo. It's like when you go away on holiday and you go to France, you need to know a little bit. So we're not saying that the rheumatology nurses need to be dermatology specialists and vice versa. But if I could do a PASI and report that in straight away, you're going to know how severe that psoriasis is. And sometimes, you know, that makes a lot of impact on a referral. So learning a little bit of what the other does and speaking the language when we're talking to our colleagues can really, really help that process. So again, I think, you know, we've got some interesting times ahead of us trying to improve the collaboration from both sides.
Yeah, absolutely. And it does work if you've got a wee bit of knowledge there as well. You know, and also, I mean, we're prescribing sometimes the same drug for the same, you know, for combination sort of conditions, aren't we? So it's really important, and that's what I feel. And I also feel like you mentioned there, you know, as a dermatology nurse, I'm not going to be diagnosing psoriatic arthritis, and I may be in doubt, but sometimes other things have been picked up, like fibromyalgia, and the rheumatology nurses really give fantastic advice on these aspects of care as well. So, you know, that worked as well, even though, you know, it wasn't specifically psoriatic arthritis. They could have other conditions that you're concerned about as well.
Yeah, and I think that's the message, isn't it? Is that if there's a concern from the dermatology nurse, enough for you to make that referral, you know, we owe it to you to do that full screening and just make sure. And 9 times of 10, and again, you know, we'll get referrals from other places. A consultant's a consultant. Again, it won't be the diagnosis that we were looking for, but it will be something else. And so you've picked something up for that patient as something that was really affecting that patient's quality of life. You've done something to put them in the right place for someone to assess and just see, is there something going on? And yes, you know, we might not treat fibromyalgia within the rheumatology services, but we'll put them on the right track and we'll make sure that patients are well supported around that. So I think that's a brilliant referral. You didn't get the end outcome of a psoriatic arthritis diagnosis, but it still got help for that patient.
Absolutely. And as I say, rheumatology is spot on when it comes to advising, you know, lifestyle change and, you know, some of the areas of the fibromyalgia, because we do see that in dermatology as well. And, you know, I've picked up tips from the rheumatology colleagues on being able to advise my patients now, you know, on that. So yeah, it's all really positive. And I think, like you say, we've got a long way to go. It's not perfect.
And it's really complex care. So, you know, even just using that example as fibromyalgia, there's obviously a number of tender points that patients will report in. And again, for our psoriatic arthritis patients, the joint count is quite widespread. So it's really easy to see why it might mimic each other. So, you know, all we're asking is that you just tell us where it is. So the diagnosing bit isn't what we're asking our dermatology colleagues to do. But actually, if you can just tell us where, how swollen, how long has it been like that, what have they tried from painkillers, anti-inflammatories, you know, that's a good quality referral that we can work on and then pick up and do the extra bits that we need to do. So it's all really, really valuable.
Absolutely. It's a good message, Julian. I think, you know, you've really discussed some key points there as dermatology nurses, what we can do for rheumatology. I think, like you say, there's really good resources out there. GrapRap I use quite frequently, you know, and you've obviously mentioned some of the sites there as well that you would look at. So it's definitely worth our listeners having a look and a browse on there. And I'm sure we can link in some of these resources as well into this podcast. So I'd like to say a massive thank you, Julie. I could speak to you a lot longer. I know that. But it's been fantastic to do this podcast with you. Julie will not be a stranger. She definitely leads the way in all the education that she does within rheumatology, but also for us dermatology nurses as well. She's always a fantastic person to have around and very passionate about what she does. So thank you very much, Julie.
Thank you so much for having me. I hope your listeners have found it really useful.
They definitely will. They definitely will. And we hope to hear from you very soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For further information on the BDNG, visit our website, bdng.org.uk, and watch out for the next BDNG podcast, which is coming soon.